like to thank everyone again who's read, help us open the meeting, and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Warm welcome to any visitors, and a huge welcome to anyone that might be new to NA with us this evening. We hope, or whatever time it is, wherever you are, we hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. Okay, like I said, we do have a speaker this evening. They're going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us for their journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. And I'm going to hand you over to the lovely Helene, who's going to introduce them. So, Helene, over to you.
Actually, so sorry. Charlie, please come and introduce Camilla. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi guys. I'd love to introduce the speaker today. Marvelous woman, and yeah, she means a lot to me. So Camilla, please come in and share.
Thank you, Charlie, and
Awesome.
thank you, Helene, and thank you everyone who's doing service here. It's always nice to be at an NA meeting, and I'm in Australia at the moment. It's 5 a.m. in the morning, and I love starting my day with a spiritual program, and this is part of it, so which is great. So let me think of it. 45 minutes, which is a long time, and I want to kind of try and pace myself. But what I want to start by saying is that I just want to call my higher power into what I'm going to share about. And I want to share honestly, and I want to share in a very real way about my experience, strength, and hope, and the struggles that I've had as well in recovery and before I got clean. And I also want to just start off by saying I am exceedingly grateful for a life of abstinence. And when I think about the way that I lived many, many years ago and how I live today, there is just no comparison. I've been given an extraordinary life by virtue of staying clean, working the steps, having a spiritual program, and learning how to put the steps out of off the wall and into my life in a real way. And I don't do recovery like everyone else. I do it a lot of, well, I do all the suggested things, but or most of them, but I also am not a rabid in the center of NA person, but for the first 5 to 7 years I got a very solid foundation in this program. So I just want to kind of say, if you're new, the most important people here are the newcomers in the first few years of recovery. I just want to say, hang around. You might be very, very surprised by the way your life unfolds, and that's been my experience. I just cannot say it enough, and I'll tell you a bit about that in my share. So I'm going to start, and I'm going to start by, it's really important for me. Part of my story is intergenerational kind of trauma and intergenerational addiction and alcoholism. And for that reason, like this is a, for me, this is a disease that lives in me, but it's also a systemic disease in that it didn't just affect me, it affected the way the climate I grew up in and how I grew up and what happened to me. And then all this stuff mingles in together to shape and form me even prior to me picking up. So I share a bit about that as well. I hope I don't trigger anyone, but I'm very honest about my life and how it's kind of all unfolded. And I start off with the earlier generations of my family. There's intergenerational alcoholism in my family. I think my father was probably alcoholic or very heavy daily drinker anyway, very refined daily drinker, but daily drinker nevertheless. And my story starts with my parents. That's just how it is for me. I'm from an Irish Catholic family in Sydney, Australia, and I'm one of 8 kids, and Irish Catholic and very like going to mass. My father was a world famous hymn composer. So I grew up, and he actually had a life that wasn't very normal. He was the eldest of 8 children himself, and he was earmarked for becoming a kind of cardinal and bishop in the Catholic Church. And he was sent to Rome, to the Vatican, to study there all through his, like in his childhood and stuff. He was sent, through the seminary system when in the days when they sent you in very, very early. The eldest boys got sent in very early to the seminary. And so I suspect that he was exposed to all the darkness and the goodness that comes from that institutional world. And then he went to the Vatican and he worked, he trained in the Vatican to become a priest. And where he went was attached to the kind of attached right next to the Vatican. And he was exposed to that world, and he was supposed to come out of that institution and go back to Australia and become a cardinal and a bishop and become all these things. But he didn't. He left a month before his final vows and then went on to work at a Catholic newspaper, and he met my mother there, and they proceeded to have 8 kids, and he became a hymn composer. And he was a very brilliant man, and he was a shadow over my life. And I've had to work very, very diligently in my recovery to work through the trauma of having the kind of parents that I had and come from the kind of background that I came from. So what happened for me was, like, I was given alcohol in the high chair. So that was my first experiences of chemicals. It was kind of standard in my thing. It was something my father brought back from Italy. And this was in the 60s, the early 60s in Australia. And I was given alcohol in the high chair. So we were given plastic mugs with alcohol in it. And wine was always central to our world and our life. And my father came back and brought a lot of kind of Italian kind of cultural things to this Irish Catholic family in Sydney. So we had this kind of unusual kind of upbringing. And we had a very intellectual upbringing as well. So there was a lot of kind of brilliance in the family and a lot of expectation around high achieving and perfectionism and things. And it was a rambunctious family as well. And it was also a very abusive family. So there was a lot of sexual abuse, and I believe that's a consequence. And I've found incredible compassion for all concerned around that, as I've traveled my recovery over the past, 27 years of abstinence this time. And there was a lot of other kinds of abuse as well. So a lot of physical abuse from my mother, and a lot of emotional abuse, and a lot of just never being good enough. And a lot of secrets. When people talk about recovering secrets keeping us sick, I grew up in a family culture, and it was its own little culture because it was so big, of a world where things were kept secret, where we didn't talk about what happened in the night, and we didn't talk about what happened at home if there was violence, which there was later on. When I was about 9, my father left, and there was, my mother had a breakdown. There was a lot of violence through the whole of my years. Well, it was violence before, but so these things shaped me, and they shaped. And on top of that, there was this kind of relationship with wine developing. Like, it was kind of like that was central to our lives. And so I don't have a time when I go, oh, I picked up. I just know that I had alcohol in the high chair, and I don't know what age I was when I was first given something that was a mood alterer. But I do know at age 8, I picked up cigarettes for the first time. And at age 9, I was caught smoking at school. So I was the classic kind of, like, I was really super smart at school. Like, I was, like, kind of blitzed everything with, and yet I was also by age 8, 9, showing signs of real rebelliousness, largely because of the kinds of private issues I was having to deal with internally that I couldn't speak to anyone about. So it was a very, very lonely experience to be in a family system where there's all these siblings that you love and you get on really well with, but everything was divide and rule. Everything was about parents, two narcissistic parents who were very damaged, but also had their good qualities as well, heaping stuff on children that were really quite innocent and didn't really understand how to negotiate their parents' emotional violence, put downs, extremes of behavior, black and white thinking, all this stuff that was just a part of the climate that I grew up in. Anyway, so by age 9, I got caught smoking, and there begins the kind of the journey into rebelliousness that was a part of me trying to establish some kind of identity that was separate from, or was that showed some kind of expression of what was really going on in my home life. And you know, like I said, you know, my father abandoned the family and left my mother with eight children, and my mother had years of emotional mental breakdowns, and I was left to navigate that. And of course, what I turned to very early on was drugs, and I turned to substances in my teen years, and I was very, very out of control from the word go. So I didn't relate to chemicals as if they were something to be social about or social with. They weren't a socially cohesive kind of vehicle for me. What they were was they were literally something to take away pain. And I knew that I was self-medicating from the word go. I had no illusions about that. I knew that I had pain in me, and I knew the pain was extreme, and I knew that it was there because I was told I was crap all the time. You know, and the really sad thing about it was that my parents were unconscious in the messages they gave me. That, you know, my mother has dementia now, my father's dead, he died a few years ago and stuff. And you know, these people were just human beings who were very damaged. And this is what we repeat if we don't address our disease. These are the defects of character that come out, you know. So I don't point my finger at other people's defects of character, and I don't want to, you know, I have enormous compassion for people today and the struggles that they have around parenting and around being kind to themselves, and me being kind to myself, and being, you know, living in accordance with spiritual principles, because my experience is everyone struggles with stuff, some more extremely than others. But what I do know is I have a responsibility and accountability to work on my own stuff so that I don't heap or repeat issues in my life that may have originated from, you know, my own story, you know, early on in my history and stuff. So here I was, teenager. So I was getting, you know, like I was tripping at school. I was getting drunk at school. I was, you know, suspended from school. All those things were happening to me, and I was still a really good student, and I was kind of like got away with things because I was good academically. And by, I don't know, by my early 20s, I picked up heroin. You know, I went to India, and I picked up, I think I first had opium there, and then, but then I picked up heroin and stuff. And you know, I don't want to go on about big drug stories and everything. I've been there, I've done it all, and I've seen it all. And I have a really, really full-on story. It's not a little mild, my that's just not my story. My story is a story of trauma and real, you know, like I've been homeless, I've been to prison, I've been, you know, wasn't in prison for long, but I've been there, I've experienced all that stuff. I've been in and out of the court system. I've been to uni, I've topped subjects at university. I've have these this life of extremes back then. And you know, and you know, I've had amazing experiences in both that darkness and the lights and the wonderful stuff that I've done. But I, you know, I was on methadone four times, you know, and I you know, for years I was on and off methadone, and you know, I was taking, you know, lots of benzos a day. I was overdosing all the time in Sydney in a place called King's Cross, which was kind of like, you know, you know, where all the down and outers, you know, would end up. And yeah, I mean, I was homeless. I was in and out of refuges, and my story was very messy for a very for a long for a lot of years. And I lived in boarding houses for years. You know, I lived in really, really shonky boarding. It wasn't a great place for a girl to live. You know, and I did what I needed to do to survive. And my it was brutal, and it was ugly, and it was awful. And it was very, very much a kind of externalized expression of what was secretly going on in my life at home when I was a child. The feelings that that engendered in me was this incredible blackness and despair, this awful feeling, this terrible feeling of kind of self-loathing and loathing of the world and fear and sickness and, you know, that icky feeling that I can get as a human being. I'm sure, you know, some of you will relate or may relate to what I'm saying. And then, of course, when I hit all that worst part of my addiction, when I really went down in my 20s and well, late 20s and 30s for years, what it was the same feeling. And I realized that I was just playing out this kind of cycle of the same kind of feelings over and over again that made me feel really bad about myself. And that's what my disease was about. I don't know what your disease is about, but mine was about shutting down feelings, shutting down pain, but at the same time, living in a world of pain and replicating the very pain that I grew up in childhood because it was familiar. So that pain became my friend because it was so familiar. And this is what happens with addiction, trauma and stuff that, you know, my what I know about it is that pain and negativity and this kind of awfulness becomes the familiar, the only familiar friend that we're left with. And so we stay there. That's my experience. That's what I did. I stayed there for years. And part of my recovery, and I'm going to share about recovery now. So, you know, like I ended up getting clean in 1998. I went up to a place called the Buttery, which is a really great, well, sorry, I shouldn't mention institutions' names, but it's up on the north coast of New South Wales, beautiful kind of alternative hippie kind of area. And I ended up at the end of my using, I had what's known as state housing or housing commission. And the only way that I had that was, you know, refuge put me onto getting it because I couldn't manage it myself. And, you know, my rent was taken out of my pension. I was on a pension, a disabilities pension, and I was just a hopeless case, a recidivist, never going to get clean. And in the end, I did get clean. I ended up kind of running with really heavy people in Sydney, and the catalyst for me getting clean was that a year earlier, a girl that I used with and was on the streets with was murdered. And I knew that, I just knew that this, you know, this is, you know, that would likely happen to me. That's how far down I'd gone and was going, and, you know, and would be there soon. So I ended up surrendering and just finding this kind of inkling of willingness. And it wasn't every yet that I had been told about in the rooms ended up coming true for me. And it was the darkest time. And I ended up just surrendering, going, there's nowhere left to go but detox again. And I did 8 rehabs. I did countless, I don't know how many detoxes. And finally, in 1998, I got clean. And there begins this story of kind of working the steps and creating and rebuilding a life. And I had to start really. So, and I went to this rehab and I stayed in there for 8 or 9 months or nearly a year. I can't remember exactly now. I'm not good with kind of time frames and stuff, but it was probably. And then I ended up in their halfway house for about 4 or 5 months as well. So I'd been in other long-term rehabs and I'd always left or been kicked out for using, basically, because I just wouldn't adhere to rules. You know, it's just they were there to, you know, I just wouldn't adhere. And then I ended up kind of sticking this one out, and then I went to the half. I surrendered so deeply. I said, I'm going to do everything they say this time. I'm going to do all the suggested things that people tell me to do, because I've tried every other process and every other option and every other combination of doing it my way, and it really hasn't worked. And so I did that, and I surrendered, and I got a sponsor, and I joined home groups. I had a couple of home groups, and I committed really fully to this thing. And I committed, most importantly, the most important thing that I committed to was abstinence and a higher power. Because when all else is said and done, when I can't get to a meeting, when I can't get to another human being, when I can't ring someone on the phone, when I can't get through to, if I have abstinence and a higher power, I'm taken care of, I'm okay. So for me, though, they have been, I've seen a lot of people come and go from this thing over the 27 years I've been around, and I know other people with a lot of time up that we get used to seeing the deaths. You get used to seeing people come and go. You get used to seeing people relapse, and you start going, well, I'm powerless over. I can't, you know, I can put in and help, but I can't rescue anyone. You get used to seeing, you go, well, that's people's choice to medicate. If they're in pain, they medicate. And that's how I feel about it. So I kept on rebuilding my life. I did everything, and I really, really just committed to this thing. And I built a life. And 27 years on, if you had told me the life that I have, in every area of my life, I have been given the most astoundingly incredible gifts. And my recovery has been really difficult. I had periods of long, decades estrangement from my family of origin. I wasn't allowed to my father's funeral, I wasn't allowed to see him on his deathbed. I wanted to go in and try and amends. He had dementia and stuff, but I was banned from that. There was because I spoke out about sexual abuse. So I had this kind of, I was really throughout my recovery, also at periods in my recovery, really labeled as a scapegoat in my family because I was articulate and vocal about things that needed to be have the light shone on them. These days I'm a bit quieter about all that. I'll share about it at meetings, but I don't kick up a fuss in my family of origin, and I accept I'm healing that, and I accept that people have their own kind of processes, and a lot of people can't deal with the level of kind of pain that I've gone into to heal. And so they keep things superficial. They don't want to look at their pasts and stuff. And I respect that these days. I don't need to go in and get on my soapbox and tell everyone else that they should do what I need to do in order to heal, which is often an affliction of early recovery. So, I've learned the grace over the years that that's not that just let people be with their own processes. And so, I want to talk about how wonderful my life is. It really is wonderful. Like I had, I mean, a few years ago, something happened where, all my siblings had chewed away all my inheritance. And I was thinking that I was going into like semi-retirement. I'm 63, and I was thinking I was going into semi-retirement. My husband and I have been really kind of successful and stuff. And I thought that I was going into semi-retirement really comfortably and everything. And what happened was I found my mother had to go to hospital with dementia a couple of years ago. And I found out that, her rather sizable estate had been denuded, and I've had to go back to work at 63. And I work as, I work in trauma-informed kind of stuff, and I work as trauma-informed person, woman, and I'm very successful at it, working with people. And I've had to go and do that when everything in me, like I had an art career as well, and a successful art career, and I've had to put my art career on hold, which I was just about to get back into, and then make this switch in accordance with the demands of the world and life and everything. And I'm back working, and I work in Australia. But what I want to say about that is I've been, it's really fantastic. Been given all these gifts and lessons, and I've been given this incredible, these incredible clients, and I've been given this incredible opportunities and stuff, and I'm just taken care of. I am literally have amazing things happen in my life. And I have, my husband and I had, we've been successful. We had a firm, in New Zealand and stuff. I moved over there about 15 years ago, so I moved countries and stuff. And we've got a regenerative organic farm, and it's a little lifestyle thing that my husband wanted, and I was right into it as well. And we've got that as well, and it's really beautiful. And we've got mini belty cows and sheep and little pheasants rocking around the farm, and we're really fortunate, like we worked really hard. I've learned to work hard in recovery. I've learned to go that the stories that I was told about myself when I was young aren't true, and I've learned to find out through other people and through having a good sponsor at times and through having really good support in the rooms and beyond and by having friends. And I've learned to discard those kind of early tapes, and I've learned to find out that I'm actually a good person, and I'm a nice person, and I'm a hardworking person, and I'm a hardworking woman, and I'm able to achieve things. And I've learned to do all that in through with a spirit of gratitude and abstinence. And so, materially, I'm very okay. You know, if anything, you know, like much more than okay. So probably don't even need to work now, and I'm still working, and it's just kind of like what I want to do now. I'm kind of called to it for probably another couple of years, given the kind of circumstances that I'm in and the situation that's come before me. And I trust my higher power on this stuff. So I've got this beautiful farm, and I've got I'm healing things with family of origin in a way that's really filled with grace and compassion and respect. I ended up going to my father's funeral, and it was held at the big cathedral in Sydney. And you know, it was like a, you know, like bloody massive funeral and everything, with, you know, the whole bit with, you know, the choir and everything. And you know, and it was really hard to go, but I went because I went there with, you know, understanding the contradictions of what make us human and what makes me human, and understanding that my father was this, you know, looming figure over my life because of abuse, but had also to go and attend, and to be able to know that the steps and traditions of this program had guided me to a place of such, and I'm not Catholic anymore, but it guided me to a place of such grace and understanding about what it means to be really broken and really human, which is what he was, and really damaged. And to go there and be able to attend and have my son, you know, my 20-year-old son, accompany me from New Zealand and go, and you know, and we weren't, you know, I was, yeah, it was a real kind of, showed me the kind of woman that I'd become, in the sense of the kind of self-respect. I walked in with self-respect, and walked in with an ability to really be incredibly grounded and real about who and what I was and what my history was, and without causing any fuss or anything. But just, I like being that kind of person today. And so, like I said, I've just got this incredible life, and it's full of depth, and it's full of, I feel really in contact with my higher power in my recovery. I've done a lot of trauma work. Like I work in the field, and I've, you know, I work with women and men, and I do residentials, and I kind of, and I'm, you know, I've learned how to be really well paid. Like I've learned how to do that in recovery. I've learned how to be like exceptionally well paid, and I've learned how to, and I mention that because a lot of us, when we come into recovery, and for years, we think that we have these gaps where we think we can't do things, and we think we can't ask for things, we think we can't be what other people are. And if we can put those stories we tell ourselves, if I can put those stories aside, I've found that I've grown incredibly, you know, and I've been able to work with sponsees on, in all areas of their lives, and this stuff, by showing them how to apply the steps in all areas of life. And that's what I'm really excited about. I sponsor today. I really love sponsoring. I'm very good one-on-one, very good. That's my skill in recovery. My skill, I'm not a big service junkie. That's not where my service is, one-to-one with people. And I'm very good at helping people understand how to put the steps into their life. And that's where my forte is. And I know where I'm best of service these days, and that's how it is for me. And I love that. And then I have a son. I've been given a son in recovery. You know, I had a first partner in recovery before my second husband, and he's in recovery too, my first husband, and he's in on the Gold Coast in New South, in Queensland, in Australia. And we're friends today, and you know, we brought a child into the world together. My son's really amazing. He's, touch wood, doesn't need to come to these rooms. He's 23, and he's just finished uni, and he's carving out a career for himself in chefing. He wants to be a really like top level chef, and he's finished a uni degree in economics and business, and he's a real super brain. And he's gone, you know what? I'm going to be true to myself. I want to do what I want to do. And he's looking at the way the world's changing, and he's making these decisions that I could only have made in my 40s and 50s. And this is what the program, he's got two parents who all kind of have the wisdom of the steps in their lives. And so he's been able to make decisions about being very true to himself in a way that I only learnt later in life through coming here and through other spiritual programs that I do and through working the steps and getting, you know, help with trauma kind of work and stuff. And what I want to say is as well, you know, like the foundation of my life today still is abstinence. I come to meetings. I've just done nearly 90 and 90. I stopped before the 90 and 90 because I was getting too burnt out from it in the mornings. And I'm back doing probably, you know, one or two meetings a week, which at 27 years is good for me. That's a foundation of my life. What else do? I co-sponsor with people. So I don't have a sponsor anymore. Now I have co-sponsoring with other friends where we work through and discuss stuff together. What else is a foundational point for me? I have the steps in my life. I work them. I still write on them. I've just about to do a fifth step in another kind of week with, well, he's kind of like my sponsor, really. He's in America, but he's a mentor sponsor kind of thing. And I'm about to do another fifth with him. And I also just make sure that, you know, this is areas of things that aren't talked about too much. I have a really strong physical program. Like I actually exercise, and not in an obsessive way, but I walk every day. And when we talk physical, mental, spiritual, emotional diseases, the four corners, this is where this disease manifests. So I treat those four on a daily basis. And I've done that all the way through my recovery. Thank God I have, because I'm 63 and I'm healthy and well and fit. And I'm not saying everyone has to be like that. I'm just saying what's worked for me. So if any of this resonates with you, I hope it does. And I hope I can be inspiring to other people. Emotionally, I work on my emotions. I've learned how through going beyond the rooms, I've learned how to really work with my nervous system in a way that means that I remain fairly even keeled these days. I'm not filled with the highs and lows of early recovery and huge emotional swings. I meditate daily. I do all that stuff. I pray daily. And I have a spiritual kind of depth in my life that's really important for me so that I stay well, spiritually and mentally quite kind of grounded. So I don't fly off the handle like I used to. And let me tell you, like, you know, I can't believe it. You know, I had guns in my house. Like in Australia, you don't have guns. Only bad people have guns. You know, it's not like America, but it's kind of like, you know, I had guns in my house when I was in my using. You know, I held people up with knives. That's my story. I don't want to trigger anyone, but that's who I was. And I'm this really gentle person today. I'm this really gentle woman. I feel so grateful. And the thing that those experiences have given me, my early life has given me, the way that I was violent, the way that I was harsh, the way that I was aggressive to survive, it's given me this enormous compassion and understanding for other people when they come into the rooms who really struggle with their behaviors. I really understand that because that's what I was like, and I'm just not anymore. It's been taken away. You know, the defects have become assets. They've been toned down. You know, things have been removed from me, fears, you know. So I just feel that this whole journey is really extraordinary. I'm here on this planet, in this life, living an amazing life. At the moment, I'm working really hard. My husband's back at the farm. We talk every morning. You know, I'm really in love with him. I love him. He's my greatest teacher because he's the person I'm closest with, as my son is. You know, they teach me. They teach me about my defects of character, and that's where the real grist, that's where the real growth is, guys. The growth isn't just having everything my way. The growth is for me to learn about what my defects of character are, what my behaviors are that cause myself and other people harm, and to go into that willingly to look at that stuff and to learn how to become a better kind of human being. That's where the growth is. The growth isn't about doing service perfectly or doing this perfectly or that perfectly or fronting up. Isn't, you know, the growth can be about those things as well, about commitment. But the growth for me has been about really, really learning how not to be frightened of my defects of character, how to make friends with them and how to learn from them, because they are the fodder that gives me the best outcomes in my life because I become a better person when I deal with them. So there's this great paradox in recovery for me, which is, you know, the things that I loathe most about myself in the past, or I've hated most about myself, my envy, my jealousy, my dishonesty, my manipulation, my aggression, my drivenness, so all these things, you know, my self-righteousness, all these defects of character that are part of what makes me, they're the things, if I look at those and address those, they're the things that make me a better person, because they're where the growth is. They're the things that I attend to. And I do that with my higher power's help and the help of you people and the help of, you know, my mentor sponsor and co-sponsor people, you know, co-sponsors that I work with, you know, discussion and stuff like that. And you know, I just have this, I really do have an idyllic life, and I'm hardworking and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. I have very broken siblings and it breaks my heart because my siblings are, you know, some of them are alcoholic. Some of them are struggling in terrible circumstances financially because of mismanagement of stuff in my family and dysfunction and trauma. And, you know, and yet I've been given this way beyond all that. And I just feel incredibly grateful and compassionate towards other people. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I've kind of given a great message today. I hope I have. I hope someone, it resonates with someone. Just be loving. If you're new, give this thing a chance, give it a go. And if you're not new, you know, it behooves me as someone with time up these days to be of service, to be compassionate, to be non-judgmental of other people, and to try to kind of be of service where I can to help other people be better versions of themselves. That's what it gives me, this thing. It really gives me that. It gives me this capacity to be a better kind of human being. And I look at the girl that I was, who was homeless on the streets, who was overdosing regularly, who was kicked out of refuges for using in toilets and was, you know, dead in the bathroom. And that was my story, who went to prison, who you know, has the horror story from hell. You know, I was running with gangsters and was like getting in all sorts of pickles and crazy stuff, you know, and just it was totally crazy. I look at that person and I just, when I see women who come in like that and no one wants to know them or people think they're really crazy or difficult and stuff, they're the women where I know I can be of service because, and I know that that's not who they are. And there are men like that too, the ones who come, they're all jailed up and they're all prisoned up and they're all tough and they're all this. And, you know, they're the ones where I can really help, you know, that's where I can do my service. Not, I mean, with all people I can do service, but, you know, but it's like I understand why people become like that. I understand the worst of us because I've been the worst of us, and I understand that that I can offer the hand of NA and offer extension and love to people who have become unlovable. And what a fucking gift that is. To be able to do that with other people. I can't do it all the time, but I do honestly believe that. And so now I'm this nice middle class, upper middle class lady who's 63 with this, you know, regenerative farm, and I've got, you know, incredible work and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, my fucking name's become the Queen's name, which I'm totally pissed off about because when I was born with the name Camilla, no one knew it. And now it's become bloody, what's her name? You know, and so, which makes me laugh. And, you know, life is just really good. I'm really happy inside. A really, really happy person, you know. I'm really happy. I have a lot of joy in my life. Sometimes I wake up with a little bit of despair, but not really often. And I'm grateful to all of you for being here. Thank you, Helene, for inviting me to share my experience, strength and hope and my story. I think I've gone on enough. Thanks to everyone here. Thanks for all attending. And thank you very much to those doing service who are keeping this meeting going and who front up and put it forward every day or every week for whatever it is for people. You know, it's a really lovely thing. I'll leave it there. Thanks so much.